hello. Welcome back to the CTO studio. I, of course, am your host, Nikolai Walker. I am in my favorite seat doing my favorite thing, and I am in studio today with Casey Kleindienst. This is our final interview, sadly, but hopefully we will have him back. He is the Director of Supply Chain Management, and as such, it is only fitting that I have to ask this question. Casey, can you please tell me why during 2020 and the outbreak of COVID did we run out of toilet paper? Like, what is that madness all about?
Because when people stayed home, they stopped using institutional toilet paper at schools and places of employment. They used their own. And then the toilet paper industry was built to make supply equal demand. So when the demand shifted from institutional use to domestic home use, that toilet paper, there was no supply for it. The part of the toilet paper industry that was making institutional toilet paper could not be used in the homes because the rolls were like this. And so they had an excess of warehouses full of institutional toilet paper, and they were out of household toilet paper. That's why. And then once you have a perceived scarcity, then all of a sudden the domestic demand, you know, went up by a million. And then that just did it. That just killed it right there. And it took time to those toilet paper factories to start gearing up more towards the domestic toilet paper, and then people relaxed a little bit. But so it wasn't just, see, everybody blames the hoarders, right? Oh, look at those hoarders. And it was like, that was like the worst thing you could be was a toilet paper hoarder. But they didn't understand the root cause, where this thing came from, you know? And the toilet paper hoarders were acting precisely the way they should have. The cherry on the ice cream is when they tried to take the toilet back to the markets when they were full vans of toilet paper. They were just told, you own it, you keep it. And all those guys, they couldn't take the toilet paper back. They got a garage full of toilet paper.
I mean, what this must have done to the grocery store supply chain must have been off the charts. I heard a theory that the toilet paper crisis was due to, in all the Hollywood movies, when there's a zombie apocalypse, people go purchase toilet paper.
And, you know, I didn't have any theories at all. I just went to the store to buy anything, including toilet paper and, you know, sundry items. And I was shocked and floored with the level of our own humanity. You know, I was just like, I can't believe that we as people are not considering the next person. We're so caught up in buying something for ourselves that it's like the other guy. So it was a very dark moment for me. But thanks for breaking that down for me, Casey. That does help a lot.
But listen, they were out of everything else. However, they had substitutes. Now, I remember, you know, going and I wanted some canned products, right? And I was stuck with what was left. But there's no substitute for toilet paper. The napkins were gone. The tissues were gone. And toilet paper was gone. All three of those disappeared with the toilet paper. And then, there's no substitute, you know. Not like going down a canned food aisle. I mean, I was buying stuff I didn't necessarily want, but if that's all I could put in my pantry, that's what I ended up buying.
Yeah, because with an even hygienic wipes, you could make your own by alcohol and...
Yeah. But meat disappeared. It was really hard to get beef. And but pork was there. No matter, I don't know, it's a funny society. I didn't realize how beef-centric this country is, because I had no problem buying pork because Gladys and I eat ribs, we eat chops, we eat all kinds of pork. We eat bacon, you know. And And we didn't think twice about it, you know. So we're going to eat pork more because all the hoarders took the beef. But, you know, if I look in the stores now, and they're always out of something, but they're substitutes. So the supply chain isn't fixed yet. But there's enough there that I you know, oh, you don't have that, I'll take someone else. I don't care. Yeah. But there's the warehousing. There's no warehousing anymore. There's no warehousing. You know, these grocers don't have, like, warehouses. I think the biggest warehousing is Amazon. And Amazon has a pretty fast turnover, too. And they don't carry anything. You know, if they're holding third-party products and they're selling third-party products, they charge rent on that space. So that if you don't sell, you're going to pay for that space. So they experience a high turnover in their business, too. That's how they make money. And so everybody's, you know, so supply chain oriented, and it's got this fragility around it that it can break, and then we're screwed. So I kept a minimum of 10 cans of tuna just in case it got really bad. So I think I'm down to 6 or something like that. The big jumbo cans. Yeah, I'm always good for a tuna sandwich once in a while. So.
You know what, Casey, me too. I'm always up for a good tuna sandwich.
Yeah, man-made. This is a man-made disaster. This is not natural. This is a laboratory experiment gone south. Intentionally. This is an attack on the free world by the Communist Chinese Party. Hey, that guy wanted to know this morning, he wanted to know what I meant by experiment. And it's good we didn't go down that path. I'm glad you changed the subject in an instant, because I wasn't about to engage him anyway. So that's why I was a little reluctant to say too much. I said too much. And I know it's a real sensitive subject.
I was in many conversations over the last 3-4 months, and I've come to contemplate what constitutes a conversation that people can't have versus one that they can. And I find it to be very interesting how heated and upset people get so quickly. That makes it really hard to have discourse. Because one person has an interpretation of events that does not align with another person's system of beliefs. And instead of it being and this doesn't apply to this morning, I'm just talking in general, instead of saying, wow, that's interesting, you're saying it's an experiment, I don't get it, you're saying it's intentional, I don't agree with that. Well, okay. So let's talk about it, let's agree to disagree, let's challenge each other's assumptions, let's just have a conversation about it, but it seems like that is unacceptable. It's everything is charged, heated, and it makes me sad that we can't. I know what happens for me personally is fear. I feel afraid. I feel when I have to stand up for something I believe in that I know is going to challenge someone else's beliefs, I feel fear. So mostly because I think I'm a people pleaser. I mean, I have my own reasons. But I'm also a blunt South African. And for me, it's like, well, let's poke the bear, or let's poke holes in each other's assumptions. And let's just enjoy let me be open to having my perspective changed. And if that doesn't change, then there's nothing to be afraid of. Everything's cool. But I think as a community organizer, as someone for me who runs many, many group conversations, my fear is that it will destroy the group.
Yeah, that's healthy. I think that's a healthy fear. You know, as a commander of the VFW in Mission Viejo, I'm sensitive to that too. I think only in a leadership position do you see everybody equal. That there aren't good guys, bad guys. That we're responsible for the crew, and anything that's gonna cause them to attack each other, we're not gonna do. It's not a matter of who's right or wrong. It's we don't want the attack. We don't want that conflict because we already know it's not gonna lead to anything productive. I'm the same way. If I'm sitting in the member chair, you know, then I throw a bomb out there, but not a leadership position, you know, because the whole is more important than any individual. And if you subtract the charged subject, these are still decent people. There's nothing wrong with these guys. And I'm talking about what we're talking about. But it's charged because there's this wrong attachment that my belief is true and your belief is not true. And I'm a good person and you're a bad person. And so if you're a bad person, then I can never get along with you. So that's attached to this contentious subject, is this morality of the other, you know?
Right. Or I think you're a bad person for what you believe, or I think you're an evil person for what you believe, right?
Yeah. And if you're bad, that means that I should destroy you, right? If you're evil, I should destroy you.
But that is my rainbows and unicorns desire for 7CTOs, is that we can have pretty heated, well, not the emphasis isn't heated. The emphasis is contentious topics, you know, diametrically opposed views, but still have a discourse that doesn't require you to withdraw yourself from the process in order to stay true to yourself. Because I think that's what people do, is they remove themselves from, well, I cannot be associated with this or you or that. And I don't think it's a simple solution, but I think it's sad when people start removing themselves from those conversations.
Yeah, it all started with political correctness. You know, that was the first time that censorship came into the language, and that you couldn't talk or say certain things. Well, why can't I talk about? Why can't we have an honest conversation without you scolding me for using the wrong word? That's what you're seeing here. And that's why I don't see a reconciliation right now to have discourse, I think, because each side views the other as being existentially harmful. You know, so it's like how do you want to live in this village? Do you want to live where everybody has a say and a voice, or do you want to live with the village ruler and we're going to have a dictatorship? You see, that's what I see here. And here's the only thing that's going to bring us back together. And here's the true object that's in the way of Marxism fully taking this country over. And that's Jesus Christ and God. God is the enemy. The statues didn't get pulled down because of the statues. The statues got pulled down because of what they represent. And when they started pulling the saints down, like, you know, Junipero Serra, he's the guy that started the missions in California like 400 years ago. When they pulled his statue down, it wasn't because they didn't like him starting the missions. It's because he represents God. And God and Marxism can't exist in the same space because Marxism relies on the state being the authority for human behavior, and Christianity or Judaism or any religion relies on a transcendent being as being the authority of human behavior. That's the conflict. So how is that? And, you know, and I don't think that the nihilists, you know, future Marxists are ready for, a missionary. They already know about God and they hate him.
Well, as the band Tiny Stills says, everything good eventually hurts, and sadly, this is hurting because this is the end of our segment with Casey Kleindienst. Hopefully, we will have him back. He is the director of supply chain management, and he is currently a professor at Cal State Fullerton. So do go check out his LinkedIn for more information about him and his orthogonal thinking. Now, if you are enjoying what you're listening to, please subscribe to this podcast available in iTunes. Do go check out 7ctos.com, and as always, we will see you next time with another interview.